Let's begin. I've got some hymnals here, about a dozen, for those of you who want to look at some, pass them around. Well, today, I don't really plan on doing much talking, if any. I just would like everyone else to think about, is this book of any use anymore? What do you think of hymns now? I think now is a good time to be thinking about it also, because as you might know, they're putting out a new hymnal soon. So, what do you think of the red hymnal?
Well, I like it. I really like it. I think there's a song that should be added. Mm-hmm. I think our great thou art is in there. It's really nice that you can put it in.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see that they have names for you.
Oh, you mean a title rather than just the first line?
Mm-hmm. I think it's meant to be all the verses between the notes. Mm-hmm. But you can, you know, those of us who have the, don't know some of the melodies.
The one big complaint I have in terms of that is in terms of singing the Magnificat, which is very difficult unless you've become familiar with it over a period of time to sing. And that prayer is not really sung in the Catholic Church, and it's very difficult for me to know when the chords of the organ come. There are different times.
When you raised the question whether we should have any hymns at all, do you mean to go into that basically?
Well, in terms of is hymn singing still something meaningful? What would it be that would make it terrible, do you think, if we sang no hymns? Yeah. That, in terms then, you would agree with what Luther said, in that the singing of hymns is a necessary part of the service.
Mm-hmm. You walk into a strange congregation and assume that you have heard singing and participating in a seed of real sense of community, although you may not know one person inside of you.
Mm. I don't feel it's a necessary part of working so much. You know, we visited other churches, Episcopal and Catholic, so there was no music whatsoever. And although I miss the music, I think that you work as whole without it. But hymns, if they're really sung well, I think they certainly are inspiring. But I wonder how many of us are really worshiping while we're singing the hymn. Too often, at least speaking for myself, we're thinking of the melody and getting things just right in the harmony instead of thinking of the content of the words.
We can repeat a verse, and it will seem much different. It'll be more a prayer, you know. We sing it, but we don't think of it.
Why do you think it is that people, that singing has become a part of worship? What is it about singing itself? Why aren't these read, for instance? Why are they sung?
Well,
Why do you think that ever since ancient times man has sung praise? What is it about the act of singing, do you think, that would make people choose that as a form in which to to praise? Then it's something that is quite different, simply in the fact that we don't go around singing to each other in conversation. It's something quite out of the ordinary, in a sense. What do you think, like here usually we sing one hymn at the beginning of the service, one hymn at the end. How does it affect you, for instance, if there is no hymn at the beginning?
If we don't start a worship with a hymn, or if we have no hymns in a service?
I feel like I'm fully
in terms of that, for instance, what do you think then of the choir, of a choir anthem? Does the choir have a purpose? Is it strictly entertainment?
And the choir is able to do something that the average person would like to do can't do, in terms of being able to sing particular songs. As it speaks what the congregation is expressing to God, or expressing their thanks for what God has done, or confession and such things. But it's on behalf of the congregation.
Mm-hmm. Why do we use the reference entertainment for the choir and not say that the sermon or another part of the sermon?
Mm-hmm.
And that's clear for people now and then to say that.
Some people feel that.
Well, if there's substance in the word, then how can it be entertainment if one is allowing the mind to follow with it?
Right. It has to be participating with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I say there, the people in the choir are using the talents they have.
They're using their talents. In what way would you say then that a person is involved in the same way with a sermon that he's involved in the singing of a hymn, or in any way?
I think it depends on the attitude of the worshiper. Some worshipers, they listen to a sermon and take the position, God listened to this sermon and judged the thing this way. He can listen to music and do the same thing to it. Or he can look at the listening to the choir and see a person speaking and be thinking along with the person and be involved in this sense so that there's something meaningful to him. And I think this would be where the difference would come in.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, as you might say, the choir is entertaining us, or the speaker is entertaining us. If it's just something that we hear and don't enter into in terms of something to help us,
mm-hmm.
in our expression.
Mm-hmm. Now, the two things of Luther that I think are most important in terms of hymns is, one, that it's necessary, and also that it's a means of speaking. What would you like to see added to a hymnal, for instance, in terms of increased difficulty in singing hymns? You notice that every hymn in this book is an isometric melody. It's all soprano, alto, tenor, bass. Some of them have held chords while another might sing. But in, for instance, increased difficulty in singing hymns, do you think that would be a bad thing? Because the one thing that we saw yesterday was that it's probable that the man of the Reformation Church was much more knowledgeable in terms of rhythm and music than we are, and that this level has generally deteriorated. Do you think it would add something to the meaning of the hymn, in other words? See, what's generally being done now is that the organist takes on the role of improvisation and adds to the hymn in that way, while the congregation always sings the one top melody line. A few people will sing the bass and the other parts, but the organist will play the descant or something slightly different, a variation on it. In what ways do you think it would be a good thing, or do you think unison singing is the best form of singing singing a hymn?
That raises the question, would there be any objection to our having cantors who would play a heavy part in leading and directing the congregation thing? And then I think one could get into this area of singing parts, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, like in terms of them working on a new hymnal, one that would be standard, say, as this is. Well, what I'm not, I haven't seen the Missouri Synod hymnal. Is that different from this? From what I've heard of Missouri Synod singing, their congregations generally take parts much more often. Does anyone know anything about this? I've heard that from a number of people. The singing is generally better.
Isn't that due to the practice and the training that they've gotten in their schools?
Would you like to see things like hymns being studied to a greater extent in confirmation classes? Mm-hmm. That sort.
Maybe we should start our services before we start the formal services. So maybe a 10-minute period of hymn singing. People like to sing hymns, that refers to the formality of the whole service. And the resource we
That's one thing, like with the Psalms, which is one reason that I really like the hymn book, is that the Psalms are in it, which are a very important musical item, I think. The one only thing, yeah, there's one book I have with me that any of you who would like to see can see. It's over by the organ, of the Psalms set to music, set to the comp line chants. And the one thing we know about the Psalms is that they were sung with gusto. And that you would use any kind of musical accompaniment that you could come up with on the spur of the moment. There was not a planned out, ritualistic, definite melody like so many of the hymns.
I think that's another advantage of the choir. They do use, in their anthems, the many of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than we do in that kind of worship.
I think what you're telling is that singing in the average church often is very kind of poor enough to be like sacrament. And then especially on a new song, everyone really needs to sing the melody, and the choir particularly to be in its learning. And I think more important is a good organ,
mm-hmm.
to penetrate them, to lead and inspire. I personally feel that you have an electronic organ, you have too much whispering congregation. You just don't have the support. Except in the place I call the village, where you have so many good singers, you get good singing even in spite of an electronic organ.
Yeah.
So I think both the organ and the choir are extremely important in teaching new hymns. But generally, we should sing new hymns.
Mm-hmm.
And only in the hymns we know real well, it's advisable to sing by.
Well, what I'd sort of like to open this into is just church music in general then, and the hymns. For instance, do you feel it's justified then for church to pay a quarter, half a million dollars for an organ? One thing I was thinking of trying was having choir desk camps, I think, rather.
But you think at least an idea, when you can give me an idea, you know?
Yeah.
We're laughing over young. In German, it was called Vorsang. You know, somebody who would lead you.
Yeah,
that would be like a hymn driver. Yes. And, you don't know a song, you know, he will sing it for you, In our congregation, we have contemporary worship services every once in a while, and because we are so familiar with that too, we have the pastor group of people, young people with a guitar or something, who will play it for us, and then we will follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I'd like to see more of is for the familiar tunes, a lot less organ, and perhaps no organ. Because I don't think it's particularly important that it's
well sung, you know, as far as musical value goes. Yeah. It's far more important that the message of the song is there. And one thing I think that this book is really good for is that it's a terrific book just for reading, and a great book, devotional book. I think everyone should have, you know, their own copy, so that it isn't just the book of the, you know, for the official service. Is that the general amount more? I'm not a professional. I suppose in the question that I raised, what I really am against are more extreme cases than that, you know, where that just seems to be an obviously good thing to do. You know, not only is it going to save money in the long run, but it's going to provide a better, you know, better background. But in a way, I feel sort of like I like the idea of the way in which they want to get the boat here. You know, it's all right if they have a boat, as long as one person gives it. And I think if they're going to have $250,000 organ, then, you know, perhaps two or three people can get together and do it. I don't think for a church, you know, for an urban church, you know, to dip into funds in that way, I don't know. Oh, that's a question dear to my heart. When I got the one thing about the German churches that I noticed when I was there was that no matter how small they were, they almost in every case had a beautiful pipe organ, and generally new, and it wasn't simply because of the war and that so many churches were destroyed, but because they have this terrific love of the singing of the German hymns. After all, they were written. I asked 8 different pastors before I finally got a yes, if I could practice on the church organ. That was all, you know. The interview was ended, go away. Which I really felt is a very bad thing. I know that there's, you know, there really isn't any way for a congregation, you know, who should really be looking after such an expensive investment to know, you know, is this person going to beat this to death, you know, or something like that. It brings up the question, too, of whether or not they should charge, you know, for the use of electricity. But I think in general churches should open that up to use. A reasonable amount. Huh? This is a different case. Being 200 miles from the nearest man capable of fixing it. You don't let anybody else touch it. But if you're in Minneapolis and can go around the corner to get the guy to come over and voice it, then that's something else again, I think. Are there any other questions that you want to ask about this week? Or about hymns in general, church music? void from music. I mean, sort of. Well, take the extreme example, 317. That I would definitely call poor hymn. I think it's sort of difficult to give a definite list of characteristics. Usually I just, you know, it's either something that strikes me as a good hymn. I think that's pretty much a, you know, personal, you know, qualification. Like reading this, I find it very offensive, very pietistic, and in some senses racist.
Why don't you read it for those who
have it? Okay. It says, remember all the people who live in far-off lands, in strange and lovely cities, or roam the desert sands, or farm the mountain pastures, or till the endless plains, where children wade through rice fields and watch the camel trains. Some work in sultry forests where apes swing to and fro, some fish in mighty rivers, some hunt across the snow. Remember all God's children who yet have never heard the truth that comes from Jesus, the glory of his word. God bless the men and women who serve him overseas. God raise up more to help them to set the nations free, till all the distant people in every foreign place shall understand his kingdom and come into his glory.
Now, don't you think the time that this hymn was written, though, it expressed the feelings of people that they wanted all people to know about their Lord?
Yeah.
Now, we've come to a development of the underdeveloped nations to a point where the situation no longer is the same, and where it becomes the sort of thing that would hurt the people that they originally meant to hurt, serve.
Mm-hmm.
This is the feeling I would have from that type of song.
Yeah, I have that feeling, but I wonder, you know, even in 1958, you know, which isn't that long ago, that this was placed in the hymnal.
It shouldn't have been put there.
You know, that
but surely this was written in the 19th century, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think, I see he died in 36, but I'd say turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, don't you think it's 1962?
Oh, man, I wrote it.
Yeah.
Now, take some of the hymns that are written today. They don't have much expense either. And 20 years from now, our people will come down there.
Then
probably like literature. Some lives and some doesn't.
Wouldn't it be similar to the songs that I saw at the table yesterday about Holy Village? I'm just a guest with you.
Yeah, that's right.
And what I see there as a guest is that this reflects experiences that you've had over the years, and with certain individuals and certain situations which were meaningful then, but in a few years won't even be meaningful.
We have to rewrite that songbook.
Well, then I would agree that they're doing this at the right time then. You figure that this book will probably come out next year, the new hymnal. Figure that's how many years? 15 years? 16 years?
You know, it's almost unfortunate we have to make a hymnal. Because it becomes set in the eyes, and it seems like this one has, when it first came out, I was in high school at the time, and I've lived with it for quite some time, but in some instances it seems like it acts as a barrier beyond which you can not go any further. Because there isn't any flexibility to it once it's found. And I wonder, well, I don't know if it's loose leaf or what, but it seems like maybe we should think of something else besides great hymnal book.
You'd have the sort of one where the songs could be removed like a loose leaf?
I don't know. I have the same impression with the liturgy. I feel sorry for visitors to the church that have to follow the program. And you go from page to page and all these things. And it seems like we should be consider these people when they come as visitors to our church. It should be extreme clarity as to what is happening throughout the whole service instead of confusing.
On the matter of more flexibility, right now in experimenting in anticipation of the new hymnal, churches are putting out hymns in booklet one, booklet two, and different types of hymns, so that it may be go towards the loose leaf, but they wouldn't last long. But I'd like to say a word in favor of maintaining a mass or a liturgy. I found in talking to the Protestant congregation that was a pastor there in Moscow, I asked him, how do you propagate the faith when you are not permitted to instruct, even in the church, not allowed to have any Sunday school? He said, we do it through the hymns for our children quietly. And again, in Russia, that which has kept the church alive there, now I'm thinking the Orthodox Church, and that's the substantial part, is the tremendous liturgy that they have. And they've carried this on down through the generations, and the people know that, and you can't take that away from them. This is the transmitter, you might say, of the faith. And I think it's true also that if you do get a thorough at-homeness in a liturgy, to experiment with it continually, it's one of a continuous flux. One ought to be elastic, but there ought to be also some places where we can sit down and rest for a while, in worship as well as in life.
I would like to add one thing to that too, in terms of our experience in the Philippines. We went to a very liberal church where the pastor did not feel constrained to preach the gospel. So we went, finally moved, Carol and I went to the Anglican church, which was a very high church. But the liturgy had a great deal of scripture in it. And there was, and you felt that the gospel was very present right straight through the liturgy. And although the Anglican priest one Sunday morning prayed for the dead, and Carol and I sort of did a sort of a mental spiritual flip, but the liturgy held us in the gospel and kept us up. Now that it wasn't our liturgy, I might say, but even the fact that, as Dr. Chuck said, there, sometimes the voice, the subjective interpretation that the pulpit might be giving was really being